Hi, this is Bronwyn Franklin, and I am coming to you with Voice to the Voiceless. Today, I want to share some thoughts on the recent mass shootings that have been occurring in America. They have been very disheartening, and it's taken America and in a lot of hurt. You know, it hurts to see 19 children and two teachers gunned down in a school in Texas, at Robert Elementary School. And since then, there has been at least 10, 15 more mass shootings. This is unacceptable. That shooting occurred on May 24th of 2022. So I was having a conversation with my son. His name is Carlo. And if you followed any of my story, there'll be more to detail. Carlo was a college student, and we fell on some hard times. I, due to my mental health, committed a crime and was sentenced to prison. And he was at college, and he felt he had no family support. He had seen myself struggle trying to raise him, his brother, and his sisters without a lot of family support, without a lot of help. All three dads were really not in the picture. The one dad that was in the picture, my husband at the time, battled drug addiction. So he watched the struggles. And being in school on a small scholarship and being out of state, it was very hard for him to take care of his finances. Long story short, two people ended up dead. And he ended up with a sentence at the age of 19, life without parole. And he has currently done 23 years of that sentence. So him and I started this conversation, and we were talking about these shootings. This is a honor roll student all through school. He didn't even do kindergarten because he was so advanced. He's an avid reader, a Discovery Channel watcher. He's always Bill Nye the Science Guy was one of his favorite people when he was a child. And he was on the dean's list in college. However, a lot of bad choices was made in 1997, 1998, 1999 for him and myself. So I'm going to read this letter, and I'm going to dip in every now and then with my thoughts and comments. And it's dated May 25th, 2022. It says, Mom, hey, it's been quite some time since I set out to write an actual letter. I must confess, I have been often to the lure of convenience and an experience of communication that email provides. I have been too willing to sacrifice the thoughtfulness and the patience and the nuance of connection a letter can provide. My bad. So what he's talking about is there's a system called JPay, and JPay allows them to be able to send out almost similar to emails to friends and loved ones that's on a list that accepts correspondence from them, and it's filtered through the prison, it's censored, and then it goes to the person, and then the person is able to send back, and you're able to send photos and stuff as well. However, it is censored, so it may take 24 hours for the correspondence to get to either end of the communication. Yeah, so him and I do a lot of that. He does that with several other friends and family members as well, as well as him and I talk at least 3 to 4 times a week via telephone. Absolutely. So the letter goes on to say, that brings me to my thoughts about the things, including our conversation this morning. This was the day after the Texas massacre. And he says that the Texas massacre is thought-provoking and sad and so unnecessary. Among other things, I can only begin to think and process it. It brings a new insight and perspective on my own situation and a renewal of focus as well. These are cultural issues at hand, and until these are brought to the surface, identified, and discussed, they'll never be dealt with. There's an irony to the idea that the last 3 weeks have seen 3 mass shootings in each of the 3 most populous states, New York, California, and Texas. He's talking about the mass shooting in Buffalo of all the black people in a grocery store by a Caucasian male. And he's talking about the California shooting of all the Asian individuals by a Caucasian male. And then the Texas shooting of all the children and teachers by a Caucasian male. The places where it might, the places where it might be easiest for someone to be lost in the shuffle in the big cities is what he's talking about. In America, we celebrate the myth of the individual, even to the degree that it is politicized and weaponized for power. There's a demonstration that occurs of someone's champion of the concept of collectiveness. So what he's saying is it's demonized when people champion the idea that there's a concept of being collective. And I got caught up in my words because this is a very touching subject. There's a dehumanization that occurs if someone champions the concept of a collective too loudly. You become demonized. He goes on to say, there's a schizoid phenomena occurring. There's an emphasis on patriotism, nationalism. The Pledge of Allegiance is taught to the children who barely can conceptualize government or what a United States is or what a patriot even means. On the other hand, the majority emphasis is on self-preservation and individual rights and entitlement, where there is no standard, anything goes. Standards can only come with conscience of some sort. Power and construct are manipulations of conscience. They are manipulations of conscience. Congress is an ideation. It's an idea. People are passing legislation concerning trans athletes in restrooms, as well as limits on rights to choose or abortion, or however you prefer to position yourself. Yet there's always argument about preserving individual freedom and government, and the government overreaches and infringement. The people who advocate for little government interference are all too willing to use government when it comes to creating a country in their own image, regardless of who suffers. After all, who personally is responsible for our own happiness, for your own happiness? After all, who's personally responsible for your own happiness? Why not be accountable for your own suffering too? Let me go back. People passing legislation concerning trans athletes and restrooms, as well as limits on rights to choose or abortion, however you prefer to frame your position. Yet they always argue about preserving individual freedom and government overreach or infringement. And there's a slash in between overreach and infringement. The people who advocate for little government interferences are all too willing to use the government when it comes to creating a country in their own image, regardless of who suffers. After all, you are responsible for your own happiness. Why not be accountable for your own suffering too? Yeah, our government, and there's more I'm going to go on, but I wanted to kind of interject, you know, right. We got all these laws and legislations coming up against transsexual athletes competing. If your birth gender was male, you shouldn't be able to compete in against people with birth genders of female and so forth and so on. And you can't use this restroom if you this your birth gender. There's all these different things our government keeps making these legislations for and against, because people with big money are offended or take heed to these things. So this is where our legislation is coming from. It's not coming from the people who are living this or experiencing it. It's coming from the people who have the big money, or who are afraid of it, or who are running from it, you know. And they're imposing their suffering, and this is my thoughts, on people who are already suffering. And we suffer even more when you oppose your opinions and you justify it through legislation. When has a man ever birthed a baby? When has a man, even if he had been sexually assaulted and raped, he has not conceived a child? And if you conceive a child and you know you have no means of caring for that child, or if it was incestuous or whatever it may have been, why bring that human being into this world to suffer? And that's what we're seeing when we're seeing these young children, because they're 18. Most of these mass shootings are coming from 18-year-olds who have had so much childhood trauma. let's allow people to continue to be individuals and make choices for themselves. So how are we going to ban the right to abortions? I have to live with my own conscience. And I think about it daily because, yes, during this time that Roe versus Wade was alive and it was active, because I knew that I was not able to take care of any more children, I was struggling with what I had. Yes, I made that decision. And don't judge me about birth control. As I have become older and experienced some of the mental health challenges that I've experienced, I am finding that I have certain medication sensitivities. And I knew it then, but nobody was diagnosing it then. I was on the smallest dose of birth control pills that a person could take. And it was making me sick. My body was rejecting it. I used the IUDs. My body rejected the metal, the plastic. My body didn't want the foreign object inside, and it caused me to be sick. So I tried different methods of contraceptives. However, back to understanding what and finishing what Carlo is bringing forth in his thoughts. The problem is that an environment where none of our achievements, accomplishments, or success is ever entirely our own requires we not take hold, such as narcissistic views. Our suffering is shared too. Ask anyone when they saw the pictures of these 19 babies in Uvalde in Texas, or those 13 grandparents, or the 13 people in Buffalo. People have different tastes and inclinations. However, very few want to be isolated. I never say never. However, I imagine no one wants to live in the woods alone if they weren't actually disappointed with society, alienated maybe, desiring of insulation. No. The individualist emphasis is alienating and isolating for many people who experience emotional, I want to say turmoil. My son does. He was not the best writer. With penmanship, which most of our children don't even know how to write anymore. They are so into autocorrect and texting and emojis and memes and all of that. They don't even know how to sit down and take a pen to a paper. So it looks like it says, for so many people who experience emotional and terminal at their perceived inabilities connect, rely within others, deeply connect with others. Okay, go back. Sorry. God bless you as well. Thank you for joining. Hope you stay on. The individual's emphasis is alienating and isolating for many people who experience emotional turmoils at their perceived inability to connect deeply with others. Hurt people, and that's true. Of these latest tragedies were perspectives of young people. And I said this, and he's saying it too. They were 18 years old, the same age he was, the same age as many of the young people who have committed crimes, aka normalizing internal notions of economics and nonconformity or developmental rational ideas of what and who society actually is. Yeah. At 18 years of age, and basically what I'm reading out of this is, we send them off and tell them to be adults. And in the midst of telling them to be adults, they have no clue of what society really is. They're still learning, you know, and they're trying to figure out how to normalize the economic nonconformity and develop radical ideas of what or who society really is. And they're still trying to figure this out because we haven't taught them this as parents. We haven't taught them this in the school systems. We've given them little bits and pieces, but they've not experienced it. We held their hand when we were teaching them how to cross the street. We sat, some of us sat in the car beside them when they learned how to drive. But as they cross that threshold into adulthood, are we still helping them learn what it looks like in society to connect deeply with other individuals? So my son goes on to say, they say home is where the heart is. What does this mean? Is that life thing that makes us a place more than just a circle on a map? What this means is that this thing that makes a place more than just a circle on a map is our personal identification with the place, our connection, our concept, our ideas, as well as our ideals. This country we call the United States is an experiment in what happens when people are empowered to have individual responsibilities to engage in their own inclinations while also trimming training some to conform to the ideals of the large collective. What are the ideals of the collectives are? How they are decided, as well as who gets to decide? Are they very elements of this politics? The country isn't about the satisfaction of everyone's least desires. Neither is it about sacrificing your every need for the needs of everyone else. It's an experiment simply because it is a fluid dynamic. The needle moves. It's interesting to write the paradox, conformity. It's how the needle moves. Yet as it becomes arguable, which is the dirtiest word no one ever speaks, I was writing my cousin last week, so I remarked that only ordinary people have flaws. Extraordinary people have quirks or are eccentric. When you're youth, there's almost a mythological quality to the notion that adolescents are supposed to be narcissistic and moody, trying to con their way or withdrawn. You know how teenagers are. Yeah, that's what we say. This, I think, is one heard. Let me see, where am I at? It's a long letter. of okay, this is of individual paradigm. We spend so much time trying to learn, teach how to be workers, leaders, artists, students, that they're learning, or sometimes being impressed upon, things that they're learning or being impressed upon to do, that we almost forget that that'll take care of itself if we learn how to simply be. Just be. Just be human. Just be self. We take for granted that in the midst of all the classes, that they'll at some point just absorb how to be people. My social studies classes in my most formative years showed we, man, nations, yet even the diversity within them. Those classes never emphasized manners or culture. They emphasized borders. That is when I actually had them at all. Where's the focus on hospitality diplomacy. There it is. It wasn't coming out. Sorry. It's really remarkable and interesting to note the paradox, the maddening world is built on or defined by its convenience. We consider ourselves contemporary simple based on how comfortable or compatible we've transformed this world. We pride ourselves in this celebration, yet people seem more disconnected. However, it is as if the most diversity of thoughts, of culture we expose, the more alone we feel, or we're restituted in identification with our own tribe. Yeah. The individuals we openly celebrate, we secretly fear. Yet we seem to only bond and connect with others over shared struggles. I call that trauma bonding. We call that trauma bonding. Like our homies. Okay. And it becomes like our humanness is our frailty and vulnerability, and that binds us, and that's the tie that binds us. Then again, what do I know? I'm just a criminal, another statistic, someone from the ghetto whose story is tragic. And if I do say so myself, only because people actually thought I might be an exception. Or have I indeed actually come a long way? I've been lucky and blessed to have yet some people and receive some grace, you know. Okay, so it's question marks here, so let me go back. Or have I indeed actually have come a long way? Have I been lucky, blessed to yet have some people and receive some grace? You know? The benefit of receiving from them have benefited my mentality and my maturity and the standards of living so greatly. It's hard to imagine myself having contributed to them in the same way. They have been mentors, lovers, friends, and colleagues, staff, and prisoners. One thing for certain, I am no example of anything, whether anything about me or inside of me or in my expressions or story reminds you of anything or resonates with you, is a personal thing inside you. So if anything, it says, I only want to live a life that sees more people free of suffering than seeing them trapped in the thorns. Love and peace. Nasir. That's the name he took on when he entered into the system. Prison system is multicultural, as so is what we live out here. And when you go in as a young kid, you have to find your tribe. And as you find that tribe, you definitely make some changes. And at the time of being 19 years old and never been in trouble in his life, he found the Nation of Islam, which usually are one of the most powerful sets in prison systems, who look out for each other and take care of each other. Because then you have the Aryan Nation in there as well. And white supremacy is in there as well. So everything that we have out here is in there, but it's in a more confined place where they have to interact with each other on a daily basis. So as he went in and he was still trying to find himself at 18 years old, he was still trying to find out what life was about. You know, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, you're still trying to figure out life. You're still trying to figure out which way you're trying to go. What is this world all about? Because again, we're not teaching that. You know, and he mentioned it in his letter, in his social studies classes. You know, he learned what was supposed to be called about cultures, but it showed boundaries. It showed borders. It didn't show humanness. It didn't interact and show overlap. So you know, yeah, so he joined the Nation of Islam. He changed his name, you know, me being a Christian person. And yes, I joined the church back in 85, and I went to a sanctified church and all of the above for a long time, and I consider myself non-denominational. You know, I believe in Christ. I believe in the Bible. I believe in what Christ stood for and that he is my savior. And that there are one God with three dimensions to it. There was God, Christ, and the Holy Spirit. I believe in that. So when he did that, I was very upset, you know, and we did have a slight bit of conflict because of the name change. And, you know, he felt it was a sign of disrespect that I would not call him Nasir. You know, and my response to that was, when you were born, that's not what I named you. And I'm maintaining the right to call you whatever I want because I'm the one that gave you life. And he didn't understand that at first, you know, and I have to be thankful to someone, I don't know who it was, but they were inside that wall that was mentoring him and working with him and teaching him and explaining to him that you have your choices to be called this by whom you want, but your mom also has the choice to call you what she wants. And by all means, she's right. You know, and the thing is, neither one of us are wrong. Because we as individuals should have choice. Our country says we should have freedom to have choice, that we should have freedom to make certain decisions. Yet and still, they pass legislations to take away our freedoms and take away our choices, especially the people that's lower in the class system. Okay, if you're not in the 1%, some of this legislations affect us that's not in the 1%. So that brings me back to these mass shootings. And we don't talk about this. We don't talk about this. The news is not giving us numbers. They're giving us some, but they're not giving us all. Yesterday alone, there were 7 shootings in America. Fatalities. So I looked up, and there's a website called gunviolencearchive.org, and I went to Google just mass shootings. And whether we realize it or not, we are a country that's at war. You know, I think if you really look at the statistics of the third world countries and where you got all of the civil wars and everything that's going on, United States is sad. Just over, I mean, in the year 2020, and we were in a pandemic, over 19,000 people died from gun violence. That was the highest in the previous 6 years before, being 2014, the lowest at 12,000. And 2016 and 17, 15,000, 19,000. I mean, no. Yeah, 15,000 in 16, 17, and 19. And we jumped for the highest. That's the highest. In 2020, we lost almost 1,000 children to guns. Ages 0 to 11. And believe it or not, in 2020, the year of pandemic, we had 611 what they call mass shootings. And I'm going to give you the definition of what a mass shooting is. And when I looked that up, the University of Pennsylvania has an article in their Department of Criminology, and it says, what is a mass shooting and what can be done? So they can't agree on a definition of what a mass shooting is. There's several different variations, you know, of a common definition. congressional research defines mass shootings as multiple firearms homicide incident involving four or more victims at one or more location close to one another. The FBI defines it is essentially the same, but there may be a distinction made between private and public. So a public would be a school, a place of worship, or a business, you know. However, mass shootings undertaken by foreign terrorists are not included in under this definition, no matter how many people die or where the shootings occurred. That's weird. Well, that's different. That's a thought. But the threshold of four or more deaths is arbitrary. There are also important exclusions. For example, if 10 people are shot, but only two dies, believe it or not, that's not considered a mass shooting. Homicides by other means are not counted. So you have to have a firearm. You know, say if somebody died, if you had somebody in a car and they deliberately ran over five people, that's not a mass killing. That's why I say it's mass shooting. You can stab 20 people, but it's not a mass homicide. And then you got the piece that brings about inclusion. It's got to do with, so now it can be included depending on the perpetrator's motive. It says in this article, there are also inclusions that can seem curious because the motives of perpetrators are not considered when defining a mass shooting. For example, multiple homicides that result from an armed robbery gone bad are included. So are multiple homicides that result from turf wars from rival gangs. So this whole idea of mass shootings need to be unpacked a little bit. Yes, I'm skimming through this article. You know, a few years ago, there's been a couple of major shootings at like rock concert events. You know, so the difference is defined by making it difficult to arrive at a consensus about the number of victims or the kind of incidents. A very rough estimate is that over the past decade, there have been more than 40 deaths per year. It's way more than that. Virtually all perpetrators are male. And we know that. Just as in most violent crimes. Yep. Mass shooting associated with intimate partner violence are the most common, but those are not called mass shootings. When you have a husband that goes in and kills his wife and three children, you know, and then himself, that's not considered a mass shooting, but it should be. It is considered a mass shooting. It's just not in the sense of what the definition from the FBI or Congress are looking at. This I have an issue with. I side on they say that the mass shooter perpetrators suffer from severe forms of mental illness. I question that. It says here in this article that we need better mental health services. I agree and disagree. I also see that, you know, I agree that I've never been a gun lover. I've never owned one. I've never wanted one in my house. Because I'm a very passionate and emotional person, and I can get really angry. And I know that in the heat of the moment, I'm not thinking clearly. So I'm not going to bring the temptation into my home. You know, because whatever the situation is, it will pass. Death and murder are permanent. I learned, and from this, some lived experiences, it causes a lot of damage to not just the perpetrator, not just the victim's family, but the perpetrator's family and friends and community. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. You know, they don't have any evidence that this is always a mental, that this is a mental health problem. They have no evidence. They have no proof. They're not doctors. And then all doctors don't always know because they don't always are able to diagnose. They're taking an educated guess. You know, and then we have this thing about the Second Amendment. You know, the right to bear arms. This is not 1776. You know, this is not a country that's fighting for its freedom. And that's the irony. We were a country that developed did I lose my podcast when I flipped over to okay, I'm not finding it. Good goodness. Oh my. I hope it's still not just hanging out somewhere. I gotta find it. Oh my goodness. Hey, this should be it. Okay. So I should still be here somewhere. I'm just not being able to see how to do what I need to do. I'm back. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Good goodness. Goodness. That was a little weird. Yep. And the clock is still ticking. Okay. I apologize. This is the first one I've done in a while, and I had to access some other documentation and some different things. But anyway, so back to now we're talking about passing new legislation for new mental health and this. And yes, we need new mental health. I think we need more people working in the mental health field that have had lived experiences, who have recovered or have started their own journey of healing. I am a multi-generational trauma survivor. I have childhood trauma. I've had mental health challenges, and I've worked in this field supporting people to help learn tools and jewels to move their lives forward. When we talk about people being bullied and picked on in school, that's real. And we as adults have experienced that, and we are not teaching our children not to do it. We are not disciplining our children when they do it. And then we're not teaching our children how to handle it when it's happening to them. We're not listening to them when it's happening to them. They're not feeling protected when it's happening to them, because everybody's so disconnected. Everybody's faces in social media. Everybody's faces in their phones. Everybody is texting and emailing or numbing out on some YouTube video or TV program and not listening to the children. No offense against teachers. They have a lot on their plate. However, when we're seeing bad behavior, there's some sort of unmet need in this child's life. These are signs that something's going on either in the classroom or in the home. Children are shutting down because they're not being heard. We're not teaching them the language to be able to express and understand what they're feeling, why they're feeling it, what to do about those feelings, and how to heal from those feelings. We as adults and as parents and as teachers and aunts and uncles, because there used to be a term that takes a village to raise a child. There was community. There was connection. We are not teaching these children. They are growing up with all this bottled up anger, fear, resentment, and pain, and they are hurt people, and they are hurting other people. This was a hurt young man, and I'm not trying to justify what he did. I'm not trying to cover it up, and I'm not blaming it on mental illness, but this was a traumatized child. Something happened in his childhood that made him shoot his grandmother first and take it out on elementary school children, because he was projecting. That's where his pain started, in elementary school. And he perceived those children to be happy and cared for, and he projected that pain on them. Not okay. Not okay. However, we are failing our children as a country as a society, and they are seeking love and acceptance and connection any and everywhere they can. And we as a society has, and we just had a young man that they found dead. He was this big TikToker. I think he was like 19 years old. He had all these followers. Okay. And he was very open about his struggle with his mental health challenges and his substance use. And he was found dead on the streets of California within the last couple of days. First of all, he was trying to connect, and he had all these followers, but he had all this pain, and there's some trauma. You know, trauma is the gateway to drugs and alcohol and promiscuous sex at an early age and all of that, because the neglect, and I'm talking from experience, the neglect and the abuse that went on in my childhood led me to seek love. And I was seeking love in all the wrong places as early as 12. I was already starting to drink and smoke weed and have sex at 12 years old because I wanted someone to love me and care for me and take care of me. I didn't have that. I had been sexually assaulted and I couldn't tell my parents. They didn't listen to anything else anyway. You know? I could come home with the best report card, but all I could hear from my mother was that you're talking too much. You have a bad citizenship because you're talking too much. Yet still I have all A's and B's. First of all, there was no recognition for the good things I had done. You could only see the bad. So I didn't feel like I was a good person. Because all I was ever told was about the bad I did. That creates trauma. Second of all, in school, that's the same way things went. You only got, I felt, attention when you were acting out. Second thing about school for me was, and I found this to be true in my children as well, the school system is set up as a one size fits all. It's a cookie cutter. When you have children that are overly intelligent, they struggle when you're in the same classroom with children that are a little bit needing more support. Say, and it's a perfect example. I have a child that's on the honor roll, and he would get in trouble all the time because when you told him something, and I didn't recognize this when he was a kid, you only had to say it once. And it was like he had this, he was like a sponge. He remembered it. So when I was sitting down trying to teach him ABCs, and he didn't want to listen. And I would be so frustrated. But what I found out was he heard it the first time and he got it. He wanted to move on to something else because now he's bored. I didn't figure that out until he was probably in the third or fourth grade. But he kept getting in trouble and getting kicked out of school. And he would be out of school for a week. And he could come back to school and do all the work that he's missed and still be ahead of the class. And then he get in trouble again. Because now I'm 2 days back, I'm already ahead of everybody else because the teacher keeps explaining this same thing because Sean over here is still having some challenges with it. But Braymon, my son, he's already got it and mastered it. So now he's doing things, getting into trouble. We have to recognize this. There's an unmet need. This child needs some challenge
because what he's learning, he's already learned. He needs to move forward. And now, but he's stuck in this cookie cutter. Okay? Bullying. Bullying is another subject. And I think some of that comes out of, again, hurt people want to hurt people. You know, when I hear the word bully, and this is stereotyping, and I'm sorry, and I don't mean to, but I think of a child who's that's overweight, whose dad is probably unhappy at home, or just unhappy because he was probably abused as a child, and he drinks a lot, and he comes home, and then he batters this kid, and the mom or whoever kicks the dog. And then this kid goes to school and he picks on somebody else. He takes his anger and frustration out from being abused at home out on somebody else. I was a child that was bullied. And I think a lot of, and as I look back over it, one of the young ladies that I have a hard time with, that she was a very bully, a bully. She was an unhappy child too. I can think of two. Very grew up with. I believe one was being molested by her uncle. You know, and there were signs, but she didn't tell. She never said anything. And we're 60 years old, and I don't think she still hasn't told anybody. And then the other young lady, her mom and stepdad, and she may have been being abused too, but everybody around her was heroin addicts. You know, her mom, her dad, her stepdad. And they were fending for themselves. And this is multi-generational trauma, because I'm pretty sure her parents and step-parents had some trauma. Because as I peel away the layers of my mom and how critical she was, I look at the fact that she had some trauma. She had some childhood trauma. And she had that she never healed. May she rest in peace now. I look at my dad, who's been gone a couple of years now, who had a very, very 30, almost 40 year drug habit. The heroin was his drug of choice. Then he ended into the cocaine, then to the crack, and back to the heroin. He finally got clean in his mid 50s. About 54. And he passed away 2 years ago at the age of 86. But I look at his childhood and what I know of family. He came into this world to a mother who at the time may have been 16 or 17, 18, whose husband had walked out on her prior to the baby being born. And then she walked out on the baby at 2 weeks old. And then that started the roller coaster ride of his life. And when she died, when my grandmother died, he sat there at the side of her dead body and said the only thing he ever wanted to hear her say was that she loved him. And this was a man that was 70-something years old crying because his mom died and she never told him she loved him. the neglect, the trauma and the abuse and the pain that he numbed out on with drugs and alcohol for 30 some odd years. To never feel worthy of love. Parents, teachers, family, we need to do better. How do we connect with young people? You heard my son wrote in his letter about how we just want to say they're moody and, you know, they're defiant or they're rebellious or this, and this. And it frustrates us. And it angers us. Yeah. But did we ever look at it from a different perspective that this child is going through something hard? That they're feeling something hard that they don't know how to express? And that they need us to connect with them as human beings and with love and curiosity to find out what that hurt, that pain, that anger is about? To peel away the layers of that trauma? Because it's not what's wrong with them. It's what happened to them. Something happened. That bad behavior comes because something happened and there is an unmet need. And if they're not getting that connection, that need, and being able to talk about and heal from what has happened. And it's not just with a mental health therapist. They need to be able to tell their story and that story be heard and believed and validated. Start that healing. That's why AA and NA and all these anonymous groups work so well, is because you can go in there and you can tell your story. You can tell your pain. You're not judged. You're validated. You're finally able to tell what happened. What happened to you? You're finally able to tell without judgment. And then you find that you're not alone. There are so many others who have pain, who may have experienced some things, and things start to resonate. I started this podcast out talking about all these mass shootings. Over 250 mass shootings in the year of 2022 already. In the last 3 years of the pandemic, the shootings have gone up. Murders have went up in this country. And we've been in a pandemic. That's trauma in itself. You just cut people off and told them to isolate. We were not created to be isolated. We were create. That's why we were born in a family or to a mother we've been connected to. We have siblings we connect to. The indigenous people, the African people, they lived in tribes. Chinese people, Muslim people, they live, brown people, they live in tight-knit communities, tribal-type communities. They connect. Because my belief is God created a person, and he said in his word, thou shalt not be alone. I will create a helpmate. So he created two beings so that they were not alone, that they could connect. We need to connect and be human. We need to teach our children it's okay to connect and be human and share and talk. Everybody's so plugged into the and dumbed out on social media. You know, my son even said it. He had become so easily connected to email that he had not actually written a letter. Instant gratification. But it's not bringing satisfaction. I know I've been over an hour on this. Like I say, I don't see it. I see it as a mental health issue, but how is it that it takes major crisis things to get help? You can't get help on a smaller level. We need community. We need to establish more support groups, more anonymous groups where people can be people and connect. And we need to start with our children. Most childhood trauma is occurring before the age of 5 years old. Because it's already, whatever's going on in the household, generational trauma is passed down. I am a multi-generational trauma survivor, and I'm working on it. And unfortunately, I passed a lot, some of that down to my children. And now I'm trying to heal it so that my grandchildren can start to be healed. So ask the questions. What made you smile today? You know, getting them to open up and share. How was your day? And listen to it. I've heard this so many times. You pick your kid up from school, they get in the car, you're on your phone gabbing with your girlfriend. Never thought about the child and asking them, how was their day? What did they learn? What did they like? What didn't they like? What happened? We gotta do better, people. I'm not through with this topic. I'm going to end it for now. But I'm going to talk about it some more. This is Bronwyn Franklin. And again, I'm sharing on the mass shootings. And I'm praying for revival and healing of our nation and of our children. Because they shouldn't be afraid to go to school. Teachers shouldn't have to be armed. Security guards shouldn't have to go to the schools and be in the schools. Metal detectors shouldn't be there. And police should not have stood outside and let 19 children die. Christ laid down his life for us. Those children lay down their lives. It's time for this country to change. Thank you.